This is Take Care, a health and wellness show produced by WRVO Public Media. I'm Jason Smith.
And I'm Catherine Loper.
Adversity isn't something that's exclusive to kids, but when it occurs early in life, toxic stress can have lasting effects. Two-thirds of Americans are exposed to extreme stress in childhood, things like divorce, death, substance abuse, or sexual assault, and they can create both mental and physical issues down the road.
Our guest is Dr. Darcy Lowell, a pediatrician and founder and CEO of Child First. Child First is an organization that helps struggling families build strong, nurturing relationships with the goal of healing and protecting children from the impact of trauma and toxic stress. It's taking a preventive approach to the problem. Thanks for joining us, Dr. Lowell.
Oh, thank you for having me.
There's been a lot of attention to the plight of migrant children and the trauma and stress they go through when they make their journey to a new country and sometimes get separated from their parents. But there are other kinds of trauma and stress that children face in dramatic situations in their lives. Stress is also a part of life, and that's not what we're talking about here. What makes toxic stress different from that normal, everyday stress?
Well, the key between understanding what is toxic stress and what is normal stress has to do with a number of factors. One is, how severe is the stress? Is it chronic? Is it something that is overwhelming to the child? So that kind of stress is toxic. And so we can think about things like maternal depression, homelessness, extreme poverty, domestic violence, abuse and neglect. Those kinds of things are extraordinarily stressful in a child's world. The very most important factor, though, is, do you have a caregiving adult who is there to really care for that child, to hold that child physically and emotionally? That is the factor which differentiates stress that is toxic and really damages the developing brain and tolerable. So even in situations which are really very, very difficult for a young child, if there is that adult there to keep them safe, to have this kind of close relationship, nurturing relationship, then that child is not going to experience that stress as toxic. And toxic is really the right word, because we're talking about real damage to the developing brain, death of brain cells. This is not something that is light and we can just dismiss. This is really severe and affects the child for their whole life.
So how long have we known about toxic stress, and where did that term come from?
Well, actually, we've known that stress is bad for young children for a long time. But it wasn't until somewhere in the late 1990s, early 2000s, that we began to really understand and pull together the literature on how damaging this really was. And it was Jack Shonkoff who did a lot of this work, and he's actually the one who named toxic stress. But I think the main point here is that these kind of stressful experiences, in the absence of this buffering relationship, this nurturing parent-child relationship, are just as damaging, if not more damaging, to both the brain and the metabolic systems of the young child.
Tell us a little bit more about how toxic stress does affect a child's development and how it affects the child over the long term as they go into adulthood.
What we know is that the brain, basically, the very earliest years are the most important time, and that the brain is developing so rapidly during the first year in life. You have many of the cells are already in place, but it's the connections that are happening that are at an unbelievably rapid pace. Some have even quoted 1,000,000 per second. When you have this kind of stressful experience, it actually disrupts that process. Instead of the child being regulated, this kind of stress basically deregulates the whole metabolic system. You've heard about stress hormones, probably a rise in cortisol that goes up, and that is what actually kills brain cells. But at the same time, what we know is that the environment is absolutely critical to how these connections are made and how really the architecture of the brain develops. There was a time when we thought it was all nature or biology that determined, you know, who we became, that DNA was all that was, you know, there, and that was kind of our blueprint. But what we know now is not nature, or it is nature and nurture combine together in this dynamic process. So what happens in that environment, whether or not that child is left alone, scared, frightened, in pain, with no one to comfort them, that's going to send those stress hormones sky high, and that is going to be wired in the brain as an experience. And the more times that is wired in the brain as experience, the more basically stable those connections become. And those actual experiences lead to proteins that are formed that hook onto the DNA and can turn the genes that determine who we are, on and off. This is called epigenetic modification, and that's a newer finding over the last 10 plus years, but that modification is absolutely critical in terms of gene expression. So we have these two things going on simultaneously: the changing of the genes, the wiring of the brain, the death potentially of brain cells, that are going to determine whether or not we all realize our potential and who we could be.
There's sort of an archetypal story that a person goes through a traumatic experience when they're young and it just makes them stronger and then they become really successful in life. Can a child really recover from these toxic stress situations?
Yes, but it's not so much the stress itself. It is whether or not there is this nurturing, responsive relationship to prevent that stress from overwhelming the child's stress response system, the metabolic system. So in the case where those stresses, there's no buffer, and they just totally overwhelm the child, that is a very much more harmful situation than the same level of stress with a parent who is there to support and nurture a child, which is why there is so much talk now about what's happening with the young children being separated from their parents. And this is really documented chemically. It's documented in science that that relationship is so powerful to protect the young child's brain. And we also know that we can make changes even when we've had this kind of damage, but it's much harder later. But absolutely, we can do it.
Now, your approach at Child First, helping families that are struggling with these situations, is a little bit different. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how that treatment model has evolved over the years?
We started developing the model in the late 1990s, and Child First officially began in 2001. And at the time, there was a lot of focus on the child alone, but not so much focus on the child in the context of the relationships and the stressors in the environment. And so our approach was, we need to do two different things simultaneously. We need to both help that family with all of the kinds of stress that they're experiencing, because that stress gets directly related to that child. So, you know, if a family is homeless, if they don't have enough to eat, if a parent has illness, if they have substance abuse, if there's depression, we need to be in there to help decrease the stressors that the family has experienced. But simultaneously, we need to work on that protective relationship, because they're unavoidable stressors. And certainly families living in poverty have them even more than so many others. But if we can actually come in and help heal that relationship, we can make a profound difference in terms of preventing future problems and future damage and healing the child and the parent. So this is a two-generation approach, both the child and parent, from the kind of trauma that they've experienced. That is why we have actually a team approach. We have a mental health clinician who is a master's level, licensed, specially trained in early childhood mental health as well as adult mental health. And that individual works psychotherapeutically with the parent and child together. So they are healing at both ends, and they are building that nurturing relationship and what we call a secure attachment. And then we also have a care coordinator, who is the other part of the team, who is someone who's a bachelor's level and who knows about the services and supports in the community and is very actively involved with that parent or caregiver, understanding what their priorities are, what their goals are, and how to connect them to the kinds of services that will make their stress and their lives better. It's kind of like you're working from two different vantage points.
Your approach there at Child First sounds unique, but what do we as a society, the healthcare professions, need to be doing differently as a whole to help children overcome this adversity?
I think that one, we've got to realize how important early relationships are and not dismiss them, like what's happening now. We can't do that because that is going to cause real, prolonged, lifelong damage. And I think just to say that the ACEs, all of the ACEs work, adverse childhood experience work, has shown us that this is not short term, that this is long-term damage, not only in mental health, like depression and substance abuse, and not only in cognition and difficulties learning, but it's in things like, we wouldn't think about, heart disease, diabetes, obesity, hypertension, cancer, the things that are so critical. So that's why we absolutely have to pay attention.
Thanks so much for being with us today, Dr. Lowell.
Thank you.